The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
Can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, no!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome back once again to the Computer Corner. It is the Data Doctors in the house, and we are not your daddy's computer radio show. Of course, not sure there was one around when your daddy was listening to the radio, but we are here to help you every week with your technological issues, questions, advice, whatever is going on in your world. 602-277-5827 for those of you that stuck around. The valley here, the valley of the torch or whatever. It's pretty warm, isn't it?
I just call it hell.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So we got Kevin and Heather and Ken here from Data Doctors to help you through the next couple of hours. And, you know, usually we bring a theme, some kind of just kind of pull our thoughts together and just kind of post that up as kind of one of the themes that we'll talk about throughout the show. And this week's show, in honor of the celebration of the birth of our nation and the freedom that is what established this whole thing, we thought, well, how do we tie that into technology in a computer show? Well, we looked at freedom and said, you know, the root of freedom is free. And what could be better than free stuff when it comes to your computer? And there you have it. There's the tie-in. Thank you very much.
Or are we going to talk about possibly free gas?
No.
That would be nice.
Yeah, no.
If you could invent that for the show, that would be great.
That would be great. I'm sure there are lots of people offering free gas. That's not really free, but it's rolled into the price of whatever it is they're selling you. So there's plenty of those options out there. But today we're going to just kind of give you, I mean, we've already posted a list of insane things. And we got our normal free stuff that we always talk about. We would try to find some things that were maybe new to your radar screen so that you're looking at some of the free stuff we have on there. Like one of the cool ones I found was the free help in picking the best hotel room. You're going to book a hotel, right? And you're going to pay the price. And don't you want to be on the side of the hotel in Phoenix that's shaded and away from the train tracks? I mean, you know, and on this side of the runway so that the noise is over there. And I mean,
and the drive-by shootings on the other side.
Exactly. Whatever's going on there. So that and many, 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 many more links on our website, datadoctors.com/radio. Will take you right to the radio show page with all of the links for this week's resources, and as well as a place for you to ask a question, make a comment. And, of course, you can link over to our free help center and look at our newsletter, look at all the advice columns we have. I mean, it's just a plethora of things that you can do to keep yourself up to speed on what's happening. It's the whole point of the show. So 602-277-5827 for you old school analog phone types. A couple lines open, which is rare, so take advantage of that. I would imagine, you know, it's a long weekend. Some people probably took off. Of course, anybody listening outside of the Phoenix metro area, you can call in as well. Get your IP phones out there, right? Or 1-800-564-5827 if you want to do the toll-free thing. That'll get you in as well. And, of course, as with every episode of the Computer Corner, the most beautiful thing that can happen is users helping users. You listening, you know you got your favorite free site, your favorite free resource, whatever it is. Share that with others. And if it's really good, we'll actually add it to our list of resources. And if it's kind of, we'll probably pretend like we were excited and then move on, huh? So that's the premise of the show. Pretty simple. And, of course, any questions and calls about anything, it doesn't matter. We'll give it our best shot to try to help you out so that, you know, when you leave, you've got something to come away from the show and go, hey, yeah, I learned something. 2 hours, we're hoping we'll teach you one thing. One thing.
You know, if it's nothing else, it's the free mental health help on the datadoctors.com.
And, you know, that probably should have been rolled up towards the top because we had a lot of computer problems.
I was thinking today, I need some help with my schizophrenia. I clicked that link and I got it.
And did you?
It's amazing.
Did you get two sides of the same website?
I still got to read it because I'm still pretty excited about that topic, but we'll get there.
You're going to back on it. All right, we'll check back with the other side here maybe after the break here. Let's start out the show with, is it Louie?
Oh, yes, out in the Atlantic Ocean.
Are you out there kite surfing out there again?
Well, actually, I pulled a muscle Monday, and I went back Wednesday, which I shouldn't have done. So uh-huh. The wind's blowing about 14, and I'm sitting here talking to you.
Well, then you can go cruising around on the internet, seeing all the free stuff that we've posted links to. What's going on with you in your computer world?
Well, I have done something that people can't do anymore. I ordered a computer, Toshiba, with Windows XP pre-installed. Hasn't been delivered yet.
Hang on, you can still do that.
But not after the 30th of the month.
Well, actually, if you, depending upon the vendor, if you order a Windows Vista business machine, you can order it with the Windows XP downgrade rights. So you actually get it with...
Yeah, downgrade rights, but not pre-installed.
Oh, yeah, no, it'll be pre-installed.
Well, anyway, it's coming pre-installed.
All right.
Kind of exciting.
Okay.
And I have already downloaded into my Linux machine free Firefox for my web browser.
Yep.
Free phone alarm for my firewall. Free AVG antivirus. Free SpyBot and free Adware. Did I get our subject for the day in?
Yeah, you're probably going to get some free problems with that as well.
No, not necessarily. depends on what what all you have in there. But those are all free things that over the years we've talked about and recommended. Absolutely.
And what I plan to do is I'll just transport them with a thumb drive over to the new computer before I get on the internet, so everything will be hopefully protected before I get on the internet.
Well, here now that's a good point. That's a good point. Now here's a couple things that those of you when you get a brand new computer. Well, most computers should come with some form of protection pre-installed, but if it doesn't, one of the best things you can do is while you're downloading and getting this machine all ready to go so that you're safe and secure on the internet, doing so behind what's called a router or a hardware firewall would be very advisable. So the Linksys is probably one of the more common devices that people see out there. Sometimes you'll see this little Linksys box with these two antennas on it. That's a wireless router, so it's got the wireless connection, and it's also performing that task of creating that boundary between you and the rest of the world while you're getting all that protection in place. So that's another way to do it. You don't necessarily have to do it the way you're talking about, Louie.
But this is just as good, or it's okay?
Sure, no, absolutely. It's just more time-consuming. But if you don't have a firewall, then that's a good way to do it to make sure.
And then I had a friend who knows computers more than I do, said... He recommended that after I get my software and at stages along the way, do an image, a drive.
Yeah, you can make an image of the entire system the way that you set it up, so that if anything bad would ever happen, you could restore that image, and you wouldn't have to go through the manual process of reinstalling all your programs and resetting your printer settings and your network settings and all that stuff.
Now, how does that vary with the restore feature?
Well, if you restore an image, it's going to wipe out whatever was there. So that it's only for catastrophic events that you're going to use the image.
Well, I mean, if you go to the XP, the Windows Restore function, where you restore to previous state.
Yeah, it's just
an image.
Yeah, no, it's not an image. All they're doing is restoring the startup and setup files. The basically a small portion of the operating system. It has nothing to do with your data, the programs, the settings, anything like that. But hang on, Louie. Hang on a second, because while you're checking out all that wind, we're going to check out the traffic here in Phoenix with Carla Cruz and the weather, I think. Well, Carla.
Yes. Yes.
Happy birthday, America. It's the computer corner. I guess that's yesterday, but a belated birthday. And in honor of the greatest country in the world, greatest nation in the world, in the history of mankind, we're celebrating all that is free on the internet. That's the closest tie-in we could come into.
It works.
It does work, doesn't it? Before we went to break, we were talking to Louis. Louis was quizzing us about different ways to create images and restore machines when you have a problem. And we were talking about the Windows Restore option, and we had to go to break there. But you understand the difference, Louis? The Windows Restore, it won't really impact the rest of the system. It's really kind of looking at the root, the actual Windows operating system.
It just does a little part, and the image of the disk will do everything.
Correct. When you take a real image, like using a Cronus or what's the Symantec product?
Ghost.
Ghost. There's a bunch of utilities out there. Chime on in there, Heather. Don't just shake your head. Nobody can hear your head rattling.
Are you sure?
Yeah, yes.
Hi, Dan.
And make sure you're nice and close there. Those kinds of programs will make an exact copy. So what some people like to do is actually buy an external hard drive or a second hard drive and make an exact image of their original. They get the machine all set up, then they make it a copy of it to another hard drive. That way they have that as a restore image. Or in that case, you literally could take the hard drive that crashes out, replace it with the one that you created the image on. I mean, you're back up and running in no time flat.
If they're the same size.
That has nothing to do with the size.
Okay.
You just tell the machine, I got this new hard drive in there, and boom, and off and running. As long as it's the same machine. You can't do it across multiple machines. But that's another way to use these disk imaging programs. So, it's substantially more comprehensive than just the system restore. And the system restore is as good as it is when it's good. It's completely useless in a lot of cases. Right, Heather?
Right.
Yeah. A lot of times you think...
The burning question related to today's theme, is there any good free software, or what do you recommend you go out and buy if you need to buy it?
Well, if you're going to do that level of disk imaging, we're using mostly the Acronis software in our operations.
Awesome and easy.
I'm sorry?
Awesome and easy.
Heather says awesome and easy, but it is. I don't know of any free programs, and I'd be a little skeptical, maybe even a little afraid of a free program, because... You want to make sure you get a good, solid copy and get verification, all that kind of thing. So,
Well, they could be stealing your information, too, while they're at it.
I wouldn't be concerned about that so much as if it's free, that means whoever wrote it is doing it, out of the kindness of their heart, and they may not have quite thought everything through. So,
Going along the free vein, on www.download.com, they have a ton of software on there that you can get, but you can usually get some kind of trial with it.
New rule.
Try it out.
Anybody that says www.anything...
Well, I don't know who's listening. I decided to throw it out there.
It's a redundant thing now. We're going to make it a rule. You don't have to say that part. It's faster to just say download.com.
I'll minus
Our
that.
Audience is sophisticated enough to get that. And my favorite is I hear these commercials all the time where the announcer goes, www.
The two W's?
Yeah. They missed one. It's like everybody knows that part, so go ahead and... Leave that out. Louis, have fun out there rehabbing, and good luck with your kite surfing as he checks with us around the world. Usually during the summer when it's really hot here, he's telling us about, he's calling from some cool locale. He's so cruel. Hey, let's talk to Veronica real quick. Veronica's got a very common issue. Veronica, you have what kind of an MP3 player?
Creative Zen.
Creative Zen. So it's not an iPod.
Right.
And then somebody said, I like Veronica so much, I'm going to get her a gift. And what did they get you?
An iTunes gift card.
An iTunes gift card. So you're going, okay, how do I make this work?
Yeah.
Because I don't have an iPod, and iTunes is designed to work directly with an iPod, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can still use the iTunes gift card.
Mm-hmm.
You'd buy your music.
Okay.
Put it into your iTunes program.
Okay.
And then within iTunes, you can actually say, I want to convert this file to an MP3 file.
So I should be able to find buttons fairly easily to do
If you click on the Advanced tab, it really depends on which version of iTunes you have, but if you click on the Advanced tab, you can say convert. You need to be highlighting the song. In fact, I think you can right-click on the song itself, and one of the options is convert to MP3.
Oh, okay.
So, and just the opposite, too. If it's an MP3 and you want to make it the AAC file format, which is the default file format for iTunes... It knows the difference, so whatever you aren't, it gives you the option to convert to the other.
Okay.
Now, there could be some issues with licensing and what have you, because they try to protect these things, but generally speaking, that will do it. You can convert it over, or you can burn a CD through iTunes of the stuff that you bought, regular audio CD like you're going to put it in your car, mm-hmm. and then convert it back or burn it back into the machine that's got the Zen connection, which will then also turn it into an MP3. A little more work, but either one, but that will absolutely make sure that all of the copy protection doesn't come into play.
So all that putting it on the CD, it knows what formats to use.
Right. Well, you're going to turn it into a regular old audio file. Okay. I'm going to put you on hold for a second here because I probably threw way too much at her all at once. It's the Computer Corner. We're talking about free stuff, and we're talking about how you can make use of all of the great free stuff on the internet. Datadoctors.com/radio if you want to see our suggestions. Or call us at 602-277-5827 with your suggestions. Back with more. And thanks for joining us here at the Computer Corner. It's the Data Doctors. As we are every Saturday afternoon here talking technology, trying to help people with problems and questions and stuff and some junk. 602-277-5827. It's a holiday weekend, so the phone lines are staying fairly clear. So if you have a question and you've been trying for weeks, nay, years trying to get in, and it's always busy, well, now is your opportunity. 602-277-5827. Join us online at datadoctors.com/radio, and you'll see that we're talking about all that's free on the internet that we think would be helpful. There's like 20 things that we've got listed up there, and we'll keep adding to it as we have this discussion. But what better way to celebrate freedom than go to the core, the root of that word, talk about free stuff on the internet? So we're doing it. And you can't stop us. Maybe Brian can, though.
Brian, how's it going?
Thanks for calling in the Computer Corner. It's the Data Doctors at your service. What can we do for you?
Well, my question was on basically on taking images of hard drives and applying them to, like, say, a different name brand hard drive, which we talked a little bit, and you've assured me there's no issues there.
Right, yeah. It doesn't matter if you did it on a Seagate and then you try to restore it to a Mac store. It doesn't matter.
But we were going to have a discussion about the different kinds of images you can take, and I am really curious as to that.
Yes. Well, programs like Acronis, and I believe Ghost will do the same thing, you can either do a full image where it's a one-to-one copy.
Okay.
Sector level, if you will, forensic. I mean, people like to use different descriptions for it, but basically, it's a bit for a bit. Basically, so if it, you know, if it took 20 gigabytes on the primary drive, it's going to take roughly 20 gigabytes on the drive you're copying to.
Okay.
You can also create what's called a compressed image, which takes the all that stuff, and it's almost like zipping. You know how you can zip files up?
Uh-huh.
You can actually zip an image, so it won't take near as much space. People like to do that because it saves a lot of space, and you can have a lot of images on one drive. And that all sounds good until you try to use an image that you compressed and it doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
And of course, when do you find out, Heather, that the image doesn't work?
When you try it.
When you need it, right, after it's too late.
Now, is there something like that you can tell initially when you're doing this? Is this just going to be in the software where you can differentiate these two kinds of images?
Yes, it'll ask you what kind of image you want to make.
Okay.
So just the compressed image, like I said, it's very helpful. Let's say that you were in charge of a huge network with 100 users on it, right? So you have 10 different workstation types of those 100 machines. So
okay.
as the administrator of the network, you're going to go and make compressed images of each of those workstation types, right? So it doesn't take an enormous amount of space on your server.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to store those images so that you can at any time pull those down and replace the image on one of the 100 workstations, depending upon which configuration it is. Well, because you're an IT guy, you're going to go through and you're going to make an image, and then you're going to test that image, and you're going to actually restore it to a machine, and you're going to actually test that restored image to make sure everything's good. Right?
Okay.
You're not gonna make the image and go, well, I sure hope this works out a year from now when I need it. So
now, is that more of an issue, you know, that problem right there, having a bad image, is that more of an issue when you're doing a compressed as opposed to a bit to bit?
Yeah, because when you're doing a bit to bit, if you're doing a direct across and you run into a bad sector, you run into some issue, usually it stops the copy and says, I got a problem. Whereas a compressed image, because it's not really testing the landing space,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to tell you I'm having a problem because It's just throwing it all in there. Bits and bytes. It's all ones and zeros.
Got it.
One becomes a zero, zero becomes a one, and your data is no longer accessible. And so it's just a matter of what you're trying to accomplish and what lengths you're willing to go to verify what you've done is valid. We're in the data recovery business. One of the many things that we do, have been for a long, long time. This is our 20th year of helping people with their computers. So we've seen everything under the sun. And one of the most common things we see from the smartest people we've ever met that are really strong, really smart IT people, is that they'll make these images and they'll forget to check them. Just a simple little thing that they forgot to check. Or nobody's checking the tape drives, or nobody's checking the, you know, whatever it is.
Okay, now, on that front, now I've taken a bit-to-bit image of my hard drive and put it on my external. Is there a way for me to go in and check that image and certain things I should look for?
Well, sure. I mean, the nice thing is it's no different than your regular hard drive. So you can literally go into the My Documents folder for a profile and open up a document. Right? You don't have to, like, decompress it. You don't have to... Another big advantage, if you have a compressed image, you have to restore that image before you can actually start pulling files off.
Got it.
Usually in that software, there's an option where you can say mount that image, and as soon as it mounts, then you can browse it, look at it.
Right, and you can start to extract stuff. But even if it mounts, and even if it looks like all the files are there, until you actually start pulling files, you won't know for sure that the entire image is good. Whereas with a hard drive, external hard drive, it's one-to-one, it's less likely. Basically, you've taken one point of failure out. The compression process is not there. And so it's a little easier to get at those files, a little easier, especially for the layman, for the novice. Because it's just a hard drive that looks exactly, your C and your D look exactly the same.
Got it.
So if I go here on my C, then I should go here on my D, and the file should be there, and I should be able to open it. Make sense?
Okay. Very good.
So, I mean, there's no one-size-fits-all answer to, you know, the best way to protect yourself, backup, imaging, that kind of thing. So it really comes down to, you know, what's your comfort level from a technical standpoint, and what are you really trying to accomplish? And if it's really about backup, the cool thing about the image backups is, like I talked about before, your downtime is significantly less because you're not having to manually reinstall everything to get back up and running.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, I have my own operating system. Basically, I built the machine, and to reinstall the software would just be a big pain.
But that's not just for you. It's for everybody out there. Nobody's thinking about these things. They're all just reinstall Windows. It's like, that's one of the most horrific things you can ever do to a computer because it's like all those little things that you've done over the last 2 years to get that computer working exactly the way you want. You got to redo every single one of those. I mean, how often do we see this?
Every day.
Yeah. And what's our check sheet look like? And the customer has to sign off by saying, I totally get it. Are you sure you understand that this is all going to be? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And even with that, people don't really realize how involved it is to take a brand new machine. Whether you're buying a new computer or reloading Windows, you are literally starting from scratch. And all those little settings, nuances, printer settings, scanner settings, your network settings, your favorites, I mean, the address book, it's gone. You start over. So the imaging really makes a lot of sense. All right, Brian?
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks for sharing your thoughts and questions, because I think other people learned from that. A couple lines open, 602-277-5827. Let's go to Rick, who's got a fairly obscure issue that I'm going to do some homework on. I didn't get a chance to yet, but Rick, you're working with FTP programs, and the reason I want to take this on the air is so that people can learn a little bit more about your world.
Okay.
So you're looking for a solution to an FTP problem. So first thing we want to do is explain to the fine folks out there, what the heck's FTP mean?
It's a file transfer protocol. In other words, I have two websites. What I'll do with these websites to get the material to the website, you have to load them up to the website or up to the server box or whatever it is, whether it be dedicated or virtual, with an FTP program. I mean, that's the way I do it. So there's a program I use, Black Bank. There's a lot of them out there. Some are free, some aren't. But I use an FTP program, which is a file transfer protocol program, to upload the files to the server so you can view it.
Yeah, so this is how you can exchange large files, or if you're doing web development for somebody, that's how you put their website up there and all that. So it's a pretty integral part of people that are in the development, or you know, if it's a huge file, you can't email it. There are these free FTP services out there, large file transfer services.
Sure.
In fact, I'm going to add that to my free list of resources.
Actually,
there.
I've got one that you recommended that I use. It's called, I think it's like a... transfer big files.
Right.
Com or
yeah, that's
like
a good
that.
One. So the specific technical issues you're having since people have upgraded to IE7, there's actually quite a bit of information out there about that. If you go to Google and type in FTP no longer works in IE7.
Right.
And if you type that in, I just found about 8 or 10 different people talking about here's some issues, here's some problems, here's some new things that are part of IE7 that you should be aware of.
Well, I'll tell you what, in all honesty, you guys have been helping me for years with my little things and my learning curve through these computers, you know. And I was hoping when I called you that you might have some magical solution. Yeah, just do this and it'll all work.
Yeah, you know, it's not, unfortunately, this is a little too technical because what happens, IE7's got a lot more security built into it.
Right.
And unfortunately, all these updates and security updates you hear about from Microsoft, it's typically to plug a hole of a resource that they created that's been misused.
Right.
So they got to figure out a way to, okay, Arcadia doors didn't originally have those big heavy locks on them. Now they have to because thieves have figured out if you go around to the back, hop the fence, you can go through the Arcadia door. Okay, we better put a lock there. Well, now the Arcadia door doesn't open and close all the time, and now people get frustrated because, but I want it to open when I want it to open.
Well, you mentioned something that was really kind of neat that I was listening to when I was talking to you before about Firefox. Now, I've got about 8 users that I want to give access to these FTP files on this server for, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I know 3 of them that use Firefox. I've used it myself. But, of course, a couple of them don't. See, so that's where I kind of run into an issue. But Firefox will work with that. Is that what you were saying?
Well, it should, but, I mean, you don't have to guess. You go and try it.
Yeah, I'll try it. I've done that.
And then, you know, Firefox 3 just came out, too, so test it.
I've got that.
Done that. So, yeah, I mean, if that works, I mean, it's always good to have both Internet Explorer and Firefox on every computer out there because there are always going to be issues with a browser that you can quickly determine if it's a browser issue by jumping on the other one.
Yeah, I've noticed it a couple of times that some things will display different on IE7 than what they will Firefox. The display qualities are a little bit different you're looking at.
But what I'm talking about is from a troubleshooting standpoint. Anytime you're trying to use IE7 and something's not working, you would immediately jump onto Firefox and see if it does, right?
Right.
It gets you past that issue quickly. And B, it tells you, okay, it's something to do with the browser. Now, if you jump on Firefox and the same thing's happening, you've now eliminated the browser. You're saying it's going to internet connection, it's on the server side, it's something else. So it's a quick way to be able to diagnose things because you have them both running.
Exactly.
So,
well, I'll tell you what, I appreciate all you guys' help with this. I'll Google that situation and see what comes up with.
Yeah,
part of this is what you mentioned a minute ago. What do you recommend for a ghosting program? Norton Ghost? Or I've got Firestone that I use for my game drives.
We use Acronis in our business.
Acronis,
yes. Acronis.
Okay.
The Acronis Imaging Software.
You can do a bootable image, right?
Excuse me?
Like, can you do a bootable image?
Absolutely.
Like an image?
Yeah, it'd be an exact copy. So it's literally, you can take the crashed hard drive out, put the image drive in. I mean, the boot sector's there. It goes, boom, you're up and running.
Gotcha.
All right.
Okay, Acronis. I'll take a look at that. Thanks, guys.
Good thing to use for servers, especially web developers, that kind of stuff. You want to make plenty of copies of all that hard work, right?
Oh, absolutely. You guys have taught me that, too, and I appreciate the help, and you guys have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thanks, Rick. You do the same. Be safe out there, and Rick is safe because he's got his data backed up. Now, you need to be safe by listening to Carla Cruz to figure out where to and where not to go. Right, Carla? Freedom Ring is our theme this week at the Computer Corner. It's the Data Doctors talking about all the free stuff on the internet that we think, this is stuff we kind of take for granted. We thought we'd put a list together, and it's getting longer as we think about it. Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, and you can see so far what we have up there. And then, of course, if you have your suggestions for additional things to suggest to others, click on the Ask a Question or General Comments links and let us know what you're thinking. Back to the phones here, and let's talk to Mike, who says he's got a slow XP Pro machine.
Yep, and I even reinstalled Windows, and it's still just dreadfully slow. A lot of times it takes, 5-7 minutes to start up.
Do you know how much RAM you have?
I'm either at 512 or 768. I can find out if you wanted me to.
No, it's okay. I also had you check. One of the first things we want to do whenever anybody says, hey, I'm having a slow machine, Heather, what's the first thing we want to know is how many processes, right?
How many processes.
And why is that important?
Because it's going to boggle down your system.
That's one of the reasons.
More that's there.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why it takes a machine forever to boot up. is that Windows has been told by all these various programs, hey, when you're starting up, go ahead and notify me and I'll jump in there with you. And so the more that you have, the longer it takes to boot up, and the more processes you have running. What do we like to see when we service a computer, when it leaves the store for Windows XP, what do we like to see it at?
35 processes.
Yeah, 35, 38 maybe. Yeah. Really depends on, you know, if there's any special hardware in there. You just checked yours and you had how many running?
51.
Okay. So, you know, in our world, that's, you know, 15, 16, whatever, 10, 12. There's a bunch of extra processes running in there that are definitely contributing to the performance issue. So what you have to decide is, do I want to go through? And we've posted a lot of detailed information in the free help section of our website. If you just put in the search parameters, just the word processes, and you'll see that I've got columns about all the different ways you can go about figuring out what those processes do to figure out, is it, you know, one thing you want to make sure is that it's not some hidden spyware program or some keylogger or something that's, you know, phoning home. I mean, that malicious software that, you know, I mean, they're out there trying to steal your identity pretty consistently, and they're really good at hiding. And this is a quick way to find out what are those extra processes, and you start looking up what each process does, and you start to find, hey, there's some really crazy stuff in here. I better go take care of this. So that's another way to really quickly look at, do I have an issue, or should I have this looked into? Should I look into it further, or is it no big deal? So if your machine was, you know, running 35, 40 processes and you said it was still excruciatingly slow, then we can start looking at hardware. But before you go spend money on hardware and things like that, we want to make sure we clean this operating system up to its optimum performance so that you're not spending money in the wrong place.
Okay, so even if it's showing a CPU usage of zero, if it's in there, it's taken up.
Well, that startup time, it's taking forever for you to start the machine, right?
Yes, but even like during the course of the just opening and closing programs, it's really slow.
Well, if you want to go through and look at the processes and look at the CPU percentage as you're actually operating, you can start to figure out. I mean, do you have AOL software by any chance?
Not other than just like Internet Explorer.
But the actual AOL software client, that's a pig that causes all kinds of problems.
I mean, it virtually just has Office and Norton and iTunes
for Windows. It's a pig. It will cause a machine, unless it's optimized. It will. I mean, when you tell iTunes to open, it takes like a year and a half, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. That's, I think, you know, I think partially Apple making sure that you have a less than wonderful experience if you're on a Windows machine, and then if you get on a Mac, it just, you know, it's real snappy.
Sure.
Actually, on a brand new machine though, it will load nice and quick. So it can be configured so that these things load properly. But unfortunately, there's so many variables, there's so many possibilities, and they're infinite. And your computer is unique to you. You have a one of a kind, one off configuration. So either you or somebody you trust or somebody you're going to pay has to dig into that and figure out what's going on and hopefully find out what it is and then help you understand how to avoid doing that in the future. That's the real key.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey, good luck with that. Processes. Go to our free help center. Go to the search engine. Type in processes, and you can see all that we've written about how to check your processes. If you want to do it yourself, go figure out what each process is. All that fun stuff. All right. When we come back, hour number two, we also have our Geek Speak of the Week, where we try to teach you some new term, new word. I think this one's very appropriate this week.
This weekend.
Weekend, right? Yeah. See if they catch on that.
We'll get there.
Datadoctors.com/radio if you want to see all of the free links that we have or ask us a question. Or, of course, you can call in at 602-277-5827. It's the Computer Corner. Ken, Heather, and your name is? Kevin.
There you go.
Back after this.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
don't! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on? On News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
And welcome to hour number two of the Computer Corner. We're talking about all the free stuff. The celebration of the freedom we all enjoy, being citizens of the greatest nation in the entire planet. Don't you feel the same way, Heather?
Yes, I do.
This is the greatest, right?
It is the greatest.
Have you been to any other countries?
Never.
I have. Trust me, this is the greatest nation on the planet. There's some cool places to travel and visit. So one of those, I wouldn't want to live there.
Of course.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really interesting, the differences in culture, when you've been to another country for any extended period of time and come back in and you realize there's a lot of stuff that's really unique to the United States that we take for granted. In some cases, things like clean streets.
Or water.
Water, yes. Yeah. Lack of sicknesses. Anyway, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, and you can see all of the free links, all the links to all the free stuff that we thought you might find interesting and helpful. While you're there, you can ask a question or make a comment, or while we're doing these next couple of segments, you can call in at 602-277-5827 and ask any question you have about what's going on at your computer. But for now, let's go to our weekly segment that teaches you a little something-something about technology. Every week, we try to bring you a new word, a new term, a new something that you can use to sound really hip and up to date and up to speed when you're hanging out or at a cocktail party or whatever, right? Dinner party. Or if you hear this term, you're not going, whoa. I chose this one because it's kind of apropos for these long weekends.
Especially with the gas the way it is.
Yes. The Geek Speak of the Week this week is weekend, but it's W-I-I-K-E-N-D, as in the Nintendo Wii. Which anybody that's ever played with one can understand how. Yeah, weekend is a weekend devoted to playing a Nintendo Wii. In other words, you basically spend the entire weekend playing the Wii.
You know, I have a Wii, and one of the most frustrating things about it, I mean, it's a lot of fun, but I get really irritated when I lose. And usually it was throwing the remote or hitting somebody with it. If I do that with that controller, I lose again.
Correct. It's a really smart machine going, don't throw that. Don't you throw that tantrum, Kevin.
And then it's got to be around your wrist so you can't throw it into the wall and walk away.
Or into the television screen or whatever.
Yeah.
So chances are if you have a Wii that you'll end up spending several weekends, especially with this $4 gas. That's, who knows, maybe $5 the next time we're on the air. Who knows? All right. So another thing that we like to do every week, we started this last week. We're going to try to keep this thing going is there's a few of you out there that have that. What's that other computer type? Besides Windows, there's a Heather. What's the name of that other operating system?
It doesn't work real. I think it's Linux.
No,
is that it?
I think it's a Mac.
Mac.
That's what it is.
Actually, there's quite a few multi-platform households out there. You know what that means? They have Windows and Mac machines.
They go both ways.
Yeah, they got both. So. That being the case, we thought, well, we better start having a little more of a discussion about the Mac operating system for those of you that are bilateral, whatever it is. And to do that, we have our buddy from Mac Media come in, sometimes in the studio, sometimes by phone. This week, Lewis is going to join us by phone. Are you there, Lewis?
How you doing, Ken?
Good. You're out somewhere enjoying your holiday weekend?
Oh, I'm in San Jose enjoying the weather.
Well, there you go. Well, we're in Phoenix enjoying the weather.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've got a pizza out on the sidewalk. As soon as we get off the air here, I'm going to go get.
Hey, as long as the studio's air-conditioned, you're fine.
Yeah, there you go. So what nugget of knowledge of wisdom do you would you want to share with those Mac users this week?
Well, for Mac Tip of the Week, I have a thing called Mac Migration. So you just transferred or you just purchased your new computer or the computer of your dreams, the new Mac. And you want to copy all your new or your old files onto the new machine, so what do you do? In the past, it's been pretty cumbersome. You know, you'd have to copy onto a floppy or a zip disk or an external hard drive and know where all those files reside and where they go. But fortunately, times have changed, and Apple's included a new application with the computer. It's called Migration Assistant.
Hey, well, I mean, Windows has that too, but unfortunately, no sale.
No sale, it doesn't work too well?
Well, it works for all the Microsoft stuff.
Okay. It leaves out the third-party application.
Well, it's kind of hit and miss. And then there's the, you wanted your printer drivers too?
Right, right. Anyway. Well, Mac Migration Assistant can transfer user account information, applications, network settings, and files and volumes as well. So it does a little bit of everything for you. In order to do this, you'll need a couple things. You're going to need to hook your computer together using a FireWire cable. After doing this, you're going to restart the old computer.
Now, where if they're out there and they have no idea what a FireWire cable, where do I go to get a FireWire cable?
Well, a FireWire cable is a 6-pin to 6-pin cable. Typically, in the Windows world, I guess you would use that to hook up a video camera.
Yeah, but where can I get this cable?
This cable, pretty much pick them up anywhere. Obviously, you can pick them up at any Mac Media location, but I would assume that you could pick them up at a Best Buy or I'm not sure if DataDoctor carries those.
Off supply stores. Basically, you can walk in and say, I need a FireWire cable, and they should know what you're talking about.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
They should, and if they don't, I'd just leave.
Turn around and walk out. Yeah. Okay, so you got the two connected.
So you got them connected. You restart the old computer and hold down the T key on the keyboard. The T key stands for target disk mode. After a few seconds, you'll see the FireWire icon dancing on the screen of the old computer system so that you'll know that computer system is connected to your new computer.
So now they're talking to each other, huh?
What's that?
That tells you that they're now talking to each other.
They're now talking to each other.
All right.
So now you have the ability to transfer that data. Don't worry about picking and choosing files before the migration because the transfer process is pretty quick because it is via FireWire. So it actually takes less time to delete those old files you don't need than it does to pick and choose them during the data transfer process.
Just take it all and then delete it off your machine when you're done.
That's what I suggest.
All right.
In order to run this application, your old system is going to have to run macOS 10.1 or later. It's going to need a FireWire port, and it's going to need the latest firmware on the computer in order to run.
What the heck's firmware?
Firmware? That's information that chipsets on the computer have in order to talk to each other properly.
So that's like the code, the instructions for some of the hardware that's inside your computer.
Exactly.
Yeah, the way I like to explain, because firmware is being used more and more often these days. A lot of chips, when they're made, their instructions are burned into the chip when it leaves the manufacturer, and that's it. You can't do anything. They won't do it. You can't update that chip. You can't make that chip do anything different. Whereas these devices that have firmware, you can actually say, okay, now I want you to add this to what you do, so it makes it makes the chip a lot more usable.
A lot of these chipsets are also downloading that information and updating itself almost automatically these days.
All right. Well, listen, you're going to put all of this stuff on the link, right, on your website?
Yeah. So once the migration is completed, simply restart the computer. Everything should look and feel as it did on the old workhorse. Restart the old computer, turn it off, you're ready to go. You can read that information on the MacMediaInc.com/radio or go to the DataDoctor/radio.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have that in our newsletter or what have you. So next week you try to do it in studio, huh?
I will be in the studio.
All right, thank you, Lewis. And with that, it's time to go to a traffic break with a little weather on the side. Would you like weather with that? I would. Carla Cruz. And welcome back to the Computer Corner, talking about all the freebies out there that are awfully darn tasty and getting better. Now, a word of caution, folks. Just because we say, hey, this is a cool piece of software or something that you can download for free, if you don't need it, don't install it. If you've heard that as we close the show over and over again. The best way to keep a computer running well is to take the Zen approach. Keep it as simple as possible, install as little as possible, make as few changes as you can so that the machine doesn't get caught up with all these extra things. We talked about processes earlier. Somebody wrote in asking, well, how do I check how many processes are running on my computer? If you have a Windows 2000, Windows XP, or Windows Vista machine, you can just do a Control-Alt-Delete, and either the Task Manager will come up or an option to open the Task Manager will come up. And in that Task Manager window, if you look in the bottom left-hand corner, it'll say Processes. And the best way to check that is to make sure nothing is running. If you have Word and iTunes and a bunch of other stuff running, that's going to add the number of processes. You want to actually check the number of processes running while it's idle, not running any particular program. We like to see that in the 35 to 40 processes range, depending upon whether you have Windows XP or Windows Vista. In laptops, we allocate a few extra processors for some of the battery power savings. There's other unique laptop stuff that's usually running, right?
Not really, no.
A few extra?
A few extra,
one or two that we'll throw in there. So if you got 60, 70, 80 processors running, folks, that's not good. And then, of course, the next question is, well, how do I get rid of them? Well, that's a little more complicated, and that's why we've posted all the information on our free help site. If you go to datadoctors.com/help, it'll take you right to the free help site, and you'll see if you scroll down to the bottom, you can search through our answers in our advice columns. Just type processes, just that one word, and you'll see all kinds of stuff come up that talks about how do you check the number of processes, how do I get rid of them, what do I do, how do I figure out what each process does. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, it's all right there. Just need to hunker down and get her done. Know what I mean? Earlier in the show, also, somebody called in and said, hey, I've got a Zen, and a friend bought me an iTunes gift card, which allows somebody to buy music, right? Somebody paid ahead of time so that somebody could download music from iTunes. Pretty cool gift. Except the Zen and the iTunes don't work. We talked about being able to convert those files. If you take a song that you downloaded from iTunes that you paid for that has the copy protection, that actually won't be able to convert to MP3 directly, because then it would be real easy to skirt their copy protection, huh? So the best way to take that music and convert it to MP3s but get rid of the copy protection is to take those songs, burn it to an audio CD like you're going to play it in your car, and then rip that back into like Windows Media Player or something like that. So I just wanted to clarify, if you were listening earlier and I said just right-click on one of the AAC files and you can convert it to MP3, that only works if you actually burned the CD originally within iTunes. If you took one of your regular music discs, stuck it in there, and iTunes ripped it and burned it onto your computer's hard drive. So hopefully that helps. Yeah? Free.
Hopefully.
Talk about free. What else is out there that you're... I mean, I love Picasa. It's one of the best free image management sites. There's a lot of like Flickr and Shutterfly where you can share your photos with others.
There's a program out there that is a competitor to Microsoft Office called OpenOffice.
Yes, that's another good one.
Completely free that I've played around with a little bit. I really like.
If you are trying to not pay the $200 to $300 and can work with a non-Microsoft Word processor and spreadsheet and what have you, OpenOffice.org is actually the link. I'll put that up there. It's a good suggestion there. It's another way to go. How about you? Anything?
He stole mine.
He stole yours. Well, the other thing about these photo sites where you share, people don't realize you automatically now have a backup of those files, of those pictures that you care so much about. So there's another reason to think about these photo sharing sites. You might be, you know, no, mine. I don't want to share with anybody. Well, then use it as a backup system. Upload that stuff up there so it's somewhere other than in your own computer. So check those things out as well. If you have Picasa, you can actually work within Google's file sharing mechanism as well, right within Picasa. So same thing with HP and all the cameras. Everybody's doing this now. So if you're not currently using some of those free resources for sharing photos, look into that. That's probably one of the better things that you can do by listening to the show. We got another half an hour left. We do have some lines open. 602-277-5827. It's the Data Doctors in the house at the computer corner. Free is the theme of the day. And if you want to see a huge list of free things that you can check out, join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, and you'll see all of the free stuff. Everything from healthcare info to answers to just about anything, to travel tips, to fashion advice, to spam filters, parental controls, and of course our favorite free web browser, which you heard me say earlier on, everyone should have Internet Explorer and Firefox for a multitude of reasons, but Guy actually is going to help me explain another reason why Firefox would be a good thing to have on every computer out there. Guy, tell us what's going on with your machine.
Yes, about 98% of the time when I go into my Yahoo Mail, if I'm trying to open an attachment or perhaps I'm trying to open up my address book, it'll just hang up and it won't do anything. And so I have to close out by going to Control-Alt-Delete and going to the control...
The processes, and shutting it down.
Uh-huh. Right. And okay. I get out, and then I can go back in, and sometimes it'll work and sometimes it won't. But most of the time, it's not working.
It just goes to sleep, right?
It just goes to sleep.
Yeah. So because Yahoo is a what they call a webmail program, you have to use a browser to be able to access it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's another reason why having something like Firefox installed on your machine is a great idea, because you would instantly want to say, okay, is it Internet Explorer that I'm having a problem with, or is it something else? And by going to Firefox, you know right away. If Firefox works and Internet Explorer doesn't, you know it's the browser. If you
go to
Firefox and it does the same thing, you know it's something to do with your system.
I see.
And if you don't know that, then you could spend a lot of time, again, chasing the wrong end of the equation. It's like the car guys. Mark Salem talks about, is it fuel? Is it spark?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's fuel and you're working on the spark side, you're going to waste a lot of time and money, right?
Right.
Same thing happens here. So by having Firefox, folks, anybody out there, if you've not downloaded Firefox, go and get it. You don't even have to use it ever, 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 other than when you're having a problem with Internet Explorer. You would then immediately jump over to Firefox and try the same thing to see, okay, is it my internet connection went down? Is it that my computer's having an issue? Right? I mean, the security software that's out there, right, Heather? It gets completely overbearing sometimes.
Yeah.
And so if that's what's causing the problem, then it'll stop both programs, right? But
right.
if it lets Firefox operate, Internet Explorer doesn't, then you know it has something to do with the configuration or something to do with... Internet Explorer itself, that you might be able to, you know, do an update, configure it, or it was working fine until I downloaded Internet Explorer 7.
Right.
You know, version change. Okay, well now I can start doing searches on the internet and Google to try to figure out Yahoo Internet Explorer 7 problems. Are other people having this same problem? And then that's how you really start to drill down to the specific details of the exact issue you're having.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
But that's another reason we talked about it earlier, and we want to reemphasize that if you don't have Firefox on your machine, get it.
I'll do it.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
All right, good luck. That's how it works, folks. You ask a question, we give you the same answer over and over again. It's the computer corner where value lives. No, I mean, it really is. It's such a basic diagnostic tool to have these days. I mean, there's so much going on with browsers. You got to have all that. So let's go back to the phones here, and let's talk to Kenny, who's having some issues with some browser or Google. There's all kinds of stuff going on in your world, isn't it, Kenny?
Hi, Data Doctors. I just want to make a quick comment about Firefox. I had Internet Explorer, and I thought my computer was the slowest computer on the planet until I installed Firefox, and it's like night and day. It's like your computer's on nitrous.
It is. Firefox has been rated the fastest browser out there. And if you go back to our newsletter about 2 or 3 weeks ago, my tip of the week was how to turbocharge Firefox to make it even faster.
Wow!
If you have a high speed internet, you know, like a cable modem or DSL,
right?
The default setting in Firefox is when you go to a web page, download those elements one at a time, kind of in line, right?
Right.
You can tell Firefox, hey, I got a fast connection, so you can download 30 different things at the same time. So all those elements that make up a web page,
yeah,
you can actually have them all loading at the same time instead of one at a time.
Wow.
Which then makes it even faster.
It's a world of difference anyway. Internet Explorer is a nightmare. A lot of times it freezes up, it cancels itself out, it times out, it's just horrible. So I'd also recommend it to everyone. Anyway.
How do you really feel, Kenny?
My problem with my computer is, and I think they're sort of related, is that I have two different applications on my computer, and it seems to be, actually three. Anything with some kind of a video seems to time itself out and turn off the application. It's Google Earth, it's whenever I download anything off my camera onto the computer, and when I play a DVD in my computer. Sometimes the applications can last up to 40 seconds, and then it will physically either freeze the computer, or in my camera's case, it will turn the application off.
Yeah, and so as we were talking off the air, you're saying, I do the normal stuff, antivirus, I do the registry cleaners. I said, hold on, registry cleaners?
Right.
And you said, yeah, you're the thing that cleans up the registries, and you thought that was a pretty good thing to have, right?
Yeah, that's what they say.
So much so that you got two of them, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, and the reason you got them is because the marketing and the advertising for these things was pretty spectacular, wasn't it?
Hey, sure.
It slices, it dices, it cures cancer for $19.95.
Right.
Whatever it is. The problem with a registry cleaner, folks, registries are the core, kind of the DNA of your computer. And one little teeny tiny mistake in the registry can have a dramatic impact on your computer. And a lot of times it can be like a major crash, or it can be some quirky little thing, because these registry cleaners have to go through. They look at 10, 20,000 keys in your registry, and based on the database of things that they have, they're saying, okay, well, this looks like a piece of spyware. This looks like whatever. We can fix this and put this back. And when they work, they're great. The problem is when they don't work, or when they make a change based on a false positive, or anything like that. And it usually is an obscure change that doesn't really have a huge impact on the functioning of your computer. But then these strange things start to happen. How long has this craziness been happening with your shutting down and shutting off? I'm assuming it didn't happen in the beginning.
Probably about 6 months. The only thing that I could put this in parallel to is I added a new video card to the computer, and I set up a two-monitor system.
And you know for sure you have the absolutely up-to-the-minute latest drivers for that from the manufacturer's website?
As of today, as we speak, no. But the day I bought the video card, I did go to the site and download the, which was 6 months ago, I downloaded the latest driver.
Well, chances are, especially since you've now, count them, had two registry cleaners in there, there's a possibility that the registry cleaners got in there and started making changes that is making your video card cranky. So
right.
What you may want to consider doing is reloading those drivers. Remove the drive. Do you know how to take it out of the device manager and reload and act like it's a fresh install?
Right.
Yeah, if you did something like that, that would make sure that all the drivers are up to date and properly configured.
Okay.
Unfortunately, once a registry cleaner makes a change to the registry, it's because it could be one of 10 or 20,000 keys. I mean,
right.
Heather, we look at registries. I mean, they're insanely complicated, right?
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah, so which key was it? Well, unless you know which key it was and put it back to the way it was, you know, it should have been one and it's zero. I mean,
okay.
it could be that benign but have that much of an impact.
So it seems to be video related.
Right. Well, but I'd conservatively estimate there's probably, I don't know, 1,000 different keys in your registry that have to do with video. So, I think a little time left in the weekend if you want to go through every one of them. There's a reason why people in the industry never use registry cleaners. Those of us that work on computers all day don't use registry cleaners on our own computer. Because we don't want to put, I mean, it's this ridiculous when it makes a mistake. Because you don't know what mistake it made. How do I fix something I don't know, you know. So when we have to do registry cleanup, we do it manually. And the first thing we do is make a backup of the registry to make sure that if we make a mistake, we can quickly go back.
Right.
The registry cleaners are supposed to do that, but a lot of times they'll ask the user, do you want me to make a backup first? And you go, nah, I don't want to wait.
Yeah.
Or they don't even bother.
So what do I do with my registry cleaners?
Get rid of them.
So just uninstall them?
I would. If you're asking me. If it was my machine, yeah.
Okay, I think you guys still may see me, though.
Well, what you need to do it depends on the age of the machine. You may want to do a reinstall of the operating system. You may want to do a manual cleanup. If there's a lot of stuff in there, it's just too much work to reinstall the operating system. So you got to have somebody that really understands the key components to go in and manually go through that thing to make sure it's properly configured and optimized for you if you're not capable of doing something like that.
Right.
Especially the more complicated. I mean, those dual monitors are great, aren't they?
Oh, it's awesome.
It's like once you start using dual monitors, you're like, I can never use a single monitor computer ever again.
Yeah, it's really great.
And the people that don't use those think we're all nuts. But
but
when you can look at an Excel spreadsheet across two screens and see twice as many columns, or have your email program running on one side and your browser, you know, surfing the internet on the other, or in my case, I have to do a lot of web-based uploads and you know, research and that kind of stuff, and being able to copy and paste from one to another. I mean, it's brilliant. So there's another thing for you people that want to step it up. You want your computer to be more enjoyable every single time you sit down. Think about dual monitors. It's good.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, good luck out there, Kenny.
All right.
And there is a solution. Hopefully you find the shortest distance between those two points, because once you start messing with the registry, especially with these registry cleaners, any two different ones, chances are they didn't agree with each other. Who knows what else? That's a pretty common thing we see, right? People, I was fine until I installed this registry cleaner. I ran the cleanup, and now my machine's acting crazy. What's the worst thing you've ever seen like that?
It doesn't boot anymore.
Yeah, it's just like, they really made a bad choice, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, if you're going to do that, folks, if you think a registry cleaner is going to be, and again, those of you out there that are saying, I use them all the time, I never have a problem, good for you.
Good luck.
When do we see people, Heather? Do we see them when they're happy and healthy and not having a problem with their computer?
Not usually.
Other than to stop by and go, hey, thanks a lot, Heather.
Yes.
So, since we see the dark side of everything, right? I mean, everybody waits till it's you know, their hair's on fire and the machine's about to blow up. Then they come see us. So we try to look at, well, what are the very common things that we see that cause people to bring their machine in that if they hadn't done that, they wouldn't have had to come in? Registry cleaners have to be at the top of the list.
Right next to data backup.
Or lack of.
Yep.
Yes.
I didn't back up. Or I just was going to make this change. Or I was trying to clean up space and started in deleting stuff, and I'm not sure what I deleted. You deleted your operating system. Thank you and good night. And with that, we're going to go to Carla Cruz once again to see what's going on the mean and very warm streets of Phoenix. And we're on the home stretch here at the Computer Corner. The Data Doctor's with you every Saturday afternoon talking about technology, trying to answer as many questions as we can, try to give you some advice that you can take. The core of this is you learn from others' pain, and hopefully you heard some pain from folks that will keep you from making the same mistake down the road. Keep your computer health happy and healthy so that you don't have to come see us from a professional standpoint. And if you back up, you'll never have to use our data recovery service. Of course, we've been preaching that for 20 years, and it's not helping. Back to the phones here. Let's talk to James and talk about switching out video on an older machine. What you got there, James?
I have a laptop that I was issued for school, you know, game design and everything, and the video cards, it's kind of chuggy when I'm running the higher level programs, and I want to change it out.
You'd like the video to be better on that laptop.
Yeah.
Laptops are proprietary in design, meaning it's not like you can go buy a different motherboard and slap it in the laptop. And most of them have integrated video, which I think you already identified. It's actually part of the main board.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no like card slot where you can just slap in a updated video card like you can on a desktop. So there is another reason why, you know, when somebody says I want a laptop, the first thing I ask them is, do you really need a mobile computer? Because there's a lot of trade-offs. Once you get into a laptop, a lot of the stuff you can do with a desktop, you cannot do with a laptop. Laptops are more expensive to service. They're more likely to have a problem with somebody dropping it, spilling on it. Of course, they're huge targets for thieves. So a lot of reasons why a desktop would be a better solution for somebody that doesn't actually need the mobility. Now, in your case, it sounds like with school and everything, that's probably not an option, huh?
No, not at all.
So in your case, there is a possibility that if you don't need anything really super fancy, that you could get some type of external device that would give you some video processing. But I can't imagine at the end of the day that would be the best solution for you. You'd have to go through some, in other words, the processing power, the thing that's going to make it faster would have to reside outside of the laptop. So even if you could find something, you'd have to carry that thing around with you and have an external monitor. I mean, it's, you know what I'm saying? It's just probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I wonder if that was the truth or not.
Yeah, unfortunately, because of, you know, I mean, today's video cards for desktops, I mean, they have their own processors, they have their own memory, they have their own fans, they're huge. And they generate a ton of heat. Laptops, when they build them, the first thing that they're thinking about is how little battery energy am I going to use? And they're trying to minimize. Like, the processor on a laptop, if it says it's the same speed as a desktop, do you realize it's actually slower?
I was pretty sure of that, yeah.
And the minute you unplug from the wall and go to the battery, it kicks down to even a slower processor speed to conserve battery life.
Yep.
So there's a little tip for everyone out there. If you have a laptop and you're trying to do something that is processor intensive, if you want to make sure that you absolutely have the maximum possible processing power, make sure you're plugged into the wall. Don't run off the battery. because you're on the battery, you know, it kicks down to battery saving mode for the display, for everything, because it's trying to conserve that power. So in your case, you're going to have to, you know, if you really want that extra processing power in video, you're going to have to, unfortunately, get a whole new notebook, which ain't cheap. Or you're going to have to say, okay, I'm just going to live with what I have, and I'm going to ride this horse till it dies.
That's not too far away. Chuggy.
There you go. Yeah, you can ask Santa Claus. You know, it's not too far away.
Oh, man, Santa Claus is cheap.
Okay. Yeah, same Santa Claus that I grew up with.
Yep.
All right. All right, good luck with that. And again, that's something people you need to understand. Laptops, you pay a huge premium in performance, in serviceability, and expense for that convenience of being able to carry it around. So, you know, a lot of people say, I don't want a laptop, so when I go up to my cabin, I'll have a computer I can take up there. And it's like, well, if the only two places you're going to use the computer is your cabin and your home, why not get a desktop at the cabin, leave it there, desktop at home, leave it there. Cheaper. You can do more with it. You can upgrade it down the road. There's all kinds of options. Because, you know, if you're going to take it up to the cabin once in a while, it's really, I mean, you don't really need that mobility. Now, if you're going to take it to the cabin or take it to the office, you can take it on the road, different deal. So really take a look at your needs and make sure that you're making the best decision. Al, Nancy, hang tight. We're going to take you off the air, see if we can't help you. Those of you that didn't make it in, we'll be here next week as well. So you can call in at the beginning of the show. That way you get a chance to get in as quickly as possible. Heather, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Now, don't talk so much next time.
I'll try not to.
But you've been listening to Kevin not talk very much. I feel like I'm a big blabbermouth here because I talked the whole show and you guys didn't say
anything. We're all learning from you.
Oh, I see.
You're the best.
Whatever, dudes.
You're the Shaolin of computer.
Okay. All right. It's getting deep in here. Before it gets too far, we're going to take it on the road ourselves. Again, we appreciate everybody that joined us. Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, if you want to see what you missed. And again, if you don't need it, don't install it. See y'all next week.